good friends. Welcome. It's 4 p.m. Central Time, and you're listening to the great GCN Radio Network. And that means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Kiley. I will be your host for the next 1 hour here on GCN. INN World Report Radio comes to you 5 days a week right here at the same time spot. And let me tell you a little bit about INN. We are a group of media activists, alternative media activists, I should stress, I suppose. Right here in New York City, we're about 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero, and we've been in business almost 10 years now, dedicated to doing the job that the corporate media is not doing, giving you and providing you with the information that they manage to keep from us, to screen out in their selection process. Of course, you can't put every story on the news, that's for sure. There's just not enough time for it. But it's very important, your selection process, and we don't need a whole bunch of stories about what various movie stars are doing or what kind of dogs they're getting or whatnot or what kind of therapy they're going back into or out of and that sort of thing. In fact, we can use a lot more information about the health and the state of our republic. And because we feel that that job is not being done by the mainstream media, and I've got a great example of that for you, which I'll speak to in just a moment, we try to roll up our sleeves and bring you that information ourselves. And we became journalists, radio, television, and blogging and so forth. So that's what INN World Report is all about. You can come to our website at innworldreport.net. And you can get many of those stories that you just heard, for instance, on our top-of-the-hour news brief, which we also provide for enlightened radio stations around the country, no matter what political stripe their mainstream or their, I should say, their slant might be. We are happy to provide this for any radio station that would like to carry real news the networks won't tell you, and I think you'll agree with much of our stories that you hear in these news briefs, for instance. That's just what's going on. Anyway, the phone lines are open right now, 866-582-9933. Give me a call. We've got a great, great interview lined up for you. A good guest will be here just shortly. His name is Kevin Zeiss, I believe, or Zeiss. I'm going to have to apologize to Kevin in advance. I'll get that straight with him when he comes on the air with us in just a few moments. But anyway, he is with a group that is trying to do something about the Justice Department lawyers that are apparently, so far at least, getting off scot-free for their twisted legal logic to justify torture, I believe in some cases maybe even after the fact that it had already started. He is with Disbar Torture Lawyers. And I think their website is disbartorturelawyers.com, and you can go there and find out a lot of information about what is being done to try to correct this one of the many important aspects of our republic that is clearly broken. Okay, so Kevin Zeiss will be with us in just a few minutes from now. In the meanwhile, you can give me a call, whatever's on your mind, we can talk about it. 866-582-9933. And again, back to what I was telling you before about real news the networks won't tell you. Perhaps you heard about the Treason in America conference that took place last weekend in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And it was very interesting because it represented two different groups coming together, the 9/11 Truth Movement and also the anti-war movement as well. So in any case, that's something that you don't always get happening at the same event. There's been sort of a little bit of oil and water syndrome with the 9/11 Truth Movement and several other movements that you would think would be interested in getting to the truth about 9/11, particularly the anti-war movement, because it is an anti-war effort getting to the truth about 9/11. Clearly, you know, there's been at least two wars that we can point to that have started as a result of it. You may say that we're already at war in Pakistan as well. In any case, this was a very interesting conference that happened in Pennsylvania. A lot of interesting speakers. We're going to be having some of them join us on the program in the next few days. So particularly Betsy Metz, the ordinary housewife from the Philadelphia area, who put the whole thing together herself. She'll be our guest on Thursday. So if you want to hear about what an ordinary citizen can do when they're motivated enough, it'll be great for you to tune in on Thursday and listen to Betsy Metz, who will be here with us, the driving force, the person who, as I understand it, reached into her bank account and took out $20,000 to put this event up in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And there were such, important speakers there as Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, several family members. Russ Baker was there, who's been on this program many times. As a matter of fact, I think Russ will be here with us at the end of the week. I would like to talk with him about his experience there. 866-582-9933. Phone line is open. Call me up. I'll send you a book. How about Jaded Tasks from Wayne Madsen? Very, very interesting book. The Blood Politics of George Bush and Company. But in any case, like I was saying before, the gatekeeping function of the corporate media. Now, it's been in the news a lot lately, the 9/11 Truth Movement, in one way or another. First, of course, there was the big announcement, about a month ago, from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth that they had now achieved 1,000 members who've signed on to their organization, 1,000 professional architects and or engineers. Okay, there are many other people who are not an architect or an engineer, but are a member of that group, or they've joined the group in one form or another. But their core members, who are actually licensed architects and engineers, they've got over 1,000 now, who are demanding a true scientific investigation, not a political whitewash, which is what we had with the 9/11 Commission. So that news has been out there. Now then you've got this poor, tortured soul who went to Washington, D.C. and was shooting up the people at the Pentagon. He's been shot dead. But it was said that he was a 9/11 truther. So maybe that's the reason why. I don't know. Maybe these are the two critical events, I think, that have been in the news concerning 9/11 in the mainstream news. And I say mainstream because even the Washington Times ran a story about the architects and engineers reaching 1,000. And I thought it was a very balanced piece for a mainstream outlet, particularly the Washington Times, very conservative outlet. Well, maybe that's the reason why, but for some reason not quite known to me, ABC's Nightline crew was compelled to cover this event in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And I urge you to go to their website and take a look at it. It's up there. It was aired, I think, last night on ABC Nightline. Take a look and see how fair and balanced you think it is. I mean, I must say, it's not the classic hit piece that you see coming from the mainstream media, but it was clear that they were, for whatever reason, either not allowed to or just plain frightened to go to the meat of the matter, the heart of the matter about 9/11 Truth. You can tell by watching the piece. But very, very interestingly, friends, and I urge you all to do this, okay, go to YouTube and look this event up, 9/11 Nightline, and what you'll see, and or Sander Hicks. You can look up Sander Hicks as well. Sander Hicks, a media activist, somebody who I know for quite some time. He's been on this program, and he'll be coming back on the program to speak about this. He was interviewed by the crew at Nightline, and of course, the 9/11 media activists are out there, so they were filming the entire interview with Sander Hicks that Nightline made, and it is fascinating to see the parts that they cut out of the ultimate the piece that eventually made it onto Nightline. They cut out, for instance, Sander Hicks saying that the FBI does not have Osama bin Laden on their most wanted list. Anyway, we're supposed to be back with Kevin Zeiss right after this. We'll see if we've gotten through to him. If not, that's just fine. We'll continue. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio. We come to you 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, right here on the Great GCN Radio Network, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And we're going to be talking about the torture lawyers, okay? The lawyers who gave the Bush administration the very twisted legal advice that, it's okay to do torture so long as you don't kill the person and so forth. But, you know, why should I sort of paraphrase it? Why don't we go to our guest who's an expert on the matter? I'd like to introduce you all right now to Kevin Zeese. Kevin is a member of DisbarTortureLawyers.com. Kevin, welcome to INN World Report.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity to get the information from somebody who knows a lot more about it than we do and who's been working with it. Do you want to bring us up to speed, Kevin? I mean, I can go ahead and put my spin on it, but it's not spin, actually, but I'm afraid my knowledge may be a little incomplete compared to yours. We're talking about a handful of lawyers from the Bush Justice Department who wrote legal memos justifying the torture. First question for you, was this done after the fact? Is it clear that it was done before or after the fact?
After they'd already started. In fact, what happened was when they initially began the torture program, they were in direct contact with the White House lawyer, Gonzalez, Beltrán Gonzalez, who became Attorney General, and with CIA lawyers. And so we've actually filed complaints against 16 lawyers, two of whom were held over and worked for the Obama administration as well, lawyers from the CIA, White House, and Department of Justice. And the ones that have gotten the attention have been John Yoo and Jay Bybee, who were Department of Justice lawyers. But, in fact, the torture program had already begun, and there are emails within Department of Justice of people who are saying that they're being pushed to come up with a ruling on this, and mentioning both Dick Cheney and the president himself, Bush, pushing the attorney general to come up with a ruling on whether or not these tortures, how they can torture legally, which are really, of course, you can't torture legally, but how they can get around the torture laws, essentially. And so that's how it, you know, it started out with daily phone calls to the White House and CIA as they were torturing people. Can we do this? Can we do that? You know, getting approval every step of the way. So the lawyers were instrumental in this. And what happened was, as they started doing it, a lot of the CIA personnel who were involved in doing the work became concerned they may get prosecuted for war crimes. And so they needed to have some protection. And that's why there was pressure put on Department of Justice to come up with a ruling that allowed torture to continue.
So these people who were doing this stuff had an innate sense that they were out in a bad legal position, right?
Yeah,
it sounds like they know better than the lawyers.
Yeah, no, there were definitely divisions among the people in the field. The FBI refused to participate. The CIA had divisions within it. The Department of Defense had divisions within it. And so, yeah, there were people involved who were concerned about this. And that's why they needed to have the lawyers imprimatur, you know, to give them essentially a shield to protect them from future liability. And so that's what the pressure was about, and that's what these memos were about.
It's interesting because I remember when I was in the military, they taught us that it was our duty not to obey illegal orders, you know, and they gave us a sense about what that might be. And for people in the field to say, we don't think this is legal, can you tell us, you know, can you clear this up for us? And then for the lawyers to say, oh, no, that's fine. You know, it sounds to me like if it's so obvious that somebody out in the field doing this stuff thinks it's not right.
Well, there's no question what they were doing is torture. I mean, you know, waterboarding has been torture. We prosecuted Japanese in World War II for waterboarding Americans. Most recently, a report came out that there were people in DOD who were insisting that the STEER program that was used to train U.S. soldiers to deal with torture, that they don't do waterboarding, because waterboarding was so powerful that it left them defenseless and actually left long-term damage. And so there were STEER programs around the country where they stopped doing torture. If you want to find information on that, my organization's Voters for Peace. The website's votersforpeace.us, and we have a copy of those reports on how waterboarding is torture and how waterboarding was too dangerous even for the training program.
There's an author named Hank Albarelli. I don't know if you've seen his book that came out at the end of last year. It's just a blockbuster of a book. It's called A Terrible Mistake, the Murder of Frank Olson and the CIA's Cold War Experiments. And it's based on about 100,000 pages of testimony that he's or witnesses that he's interviewed and Freedom of Information Act requests. And it details a whole program that the CIA went into in the 50s and 60s.
Yep.
To use hallucinogenic drugs, for instance, like LSD, right. to torture people.
Right. Sure.
And it's and I'm getting reports that they're doing that now. You don't hear it. You hear the waterboarding all the time. But it's been reported that Jose Padilla was subjected to the use of LSD, for instance. Are you familiar with anything like that?
I've heard the same thing, and there have not been many reports about it. I'm aware of the Olson case. And you know, there's no question we're doing all sorts of experimentation like this to figure things out. We've heard, you know, sketchy reports from that, but no real reporting on it, and I'm sure that's pretty hard reporting to do.
I believe it's the his attorneys who have said that he was subjected to LSD. There was an article that Albarelli wrote in Truth Out that came out about a week and a half ago. If you're interested in the case, you know, what I'll do is I'll email you or something. You can get me an address. I'll get
sure.
you a copy of
yeah.
the book. It's just an amazing book. It's causing I don't mean to get too far afield here, but it's causing a big stir in France right now because one of the revelations in the book, the reason he was murdered was because they weaponized LSD and tested it out on a village in France in 1951, in August of 1951.
Now, wasn't Olson allegedly jumping out a window in New York or something? Was that?
Yeah, yeah. He was thrown out a window.
Right. Well, that's why I said allegedly jumping.
Right. Right. He was thrown out a window, and Albarelli names the names of the people who did it. The reason is because he was a U.S. Army weapons specialist at Camp Dietrich, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was
right.
recruited by the CIA to get involved in their mind control stuff because of his knowledge on how to weaponize these things and so forth. And he was disgusted by the test, apparently, that they did on this unsuspecting village in France. Five people died. People went crazy. And he spoke about it to the wrong person, who then reported to his superior. And then they determined he became a security risk. They gave him LSD. Surreptitiously to interrogate him, and he realized that the jig was up, and he told his wife, "I've made a terrible mistake." That's the title of the book. And then they started to put him into the CIA's psychiatric gulag, and that's when he
yep.
jumped out the window.
Right, or jumped out, right. And then now Camp Dietrich is now Fort Dietrich, which is the largest bioweapons facility in the world, and it's only about 45 minutes from my house. I'm downwind.
How about that? Well, listen, we're going to get back on the whole torture subject because we need to get some of these cobwebs cleared up. But I thought that it's an important question. I think they're still using those methods that they learned back in those days. We'll be right back with Kevin Zeese just after this. Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, and I'm liking this guy. We've got Kevin Zeese talking with us today from disbartorturelawyers.com, and we've got a caller on the line. Jim from New York's on the line. Jim, we're going to get to you in just 1 second. Thank you so much for holding on through that break. And you might as well join us, friends, if you've got a question for Kevin Zeese from disbartorturelawyers.com. We're going to open the phone lines up now, 866-582-9933, and call in and pose your question. Kevin, why don't we go to Jim in New York? Jim,
okay.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm right here. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I'm sure you're aware that the treasonous Joe Lieberman and John McCain have recently submitted a bill in the Senate that basically they'll be able to interrogate and torture American citizens for no reason whatsoever, which is, you know, why I felt I needed to call in, because what you're doing is very important. You know, if you can get the lawyers, get these lawyers disbarred who have, previously sanctioned torture, maybe this will help get it stopped in the Senate. And I guess my question is open for comments. Are you concerned about this bill that's been proposed by these two senators?
Well, we have a real uphill battle on getting the bar associations to do what seems so obvious and say it's unethical to use your law license to facilitate torture. I mean, it seems like that's a pretty low bar of ethical standard for bar associations to hold lawyers to, but it's not an easy battle, and you can see already in the Department of Justice how tough it was. So it's going to take a lot of effort, and going to take people getting involved. And so I hope people go to disbartorturelawyers.com and sign up, and go to votersforpeace.us, my organization, and sign up there as well. Lieberman and McCain are a problem on a lot of fronts. The bill you're talking about, allowing interrogation is one. Another one that they're pushing is not allowing any civilian trials of people who are accused of who are these non-enemy combatants. I think both of those approaches are the wrong direction to be going. I mean, if we are going to stop using our court system and stop obeying federal law which prohibits torture, stop obeying international law, the Convention Against Torture, the Geneva Conventions that prohibit torture, we're becoming a lawless country.
What I don't get, John McCain spent 5 years in a Vietnamese prison camp, and now he's proposing the same thing that happened to him.
Yep.
Somebody has got to be in his pocket pretty deep or have something on him. And
John McCain's a pretty hawkish guy, and who knows? He hasn't shown a lot of scruples in the Senate, and so I don't know if anyone's deep in his pocket. He certainly has had a history of, being deep in the pocket of big corporate interests. There's no question about that, and also with military-industrial contractors. So he definitely is deep in their pocket. But John McCain he's a hawk. And,
if I can jump in, gentlemen, I agree with you about a lot of things, but. Unless I'm wrong, generally speaking, he used to seem to draw the line when it came to torture, right?
He did. He did.
Yeah, so that shows the depth of the corruption.
But I think that now we're in a situation with Obama saying no more torture, and so things have changed when Bush was in there, who was doing, who was pretty open about torture. Well, they didn't call it that, enhanced interrogation, I guess that was their euphemism for it. And so now it's a different balance, and, so I think I could see McCain changing positions in reaction to Obama.
Unbelievable. Jim, do you have another question, or is that good for you for today?
No, that's good for me today, and thanks for having me on.
But listen, hold on. Can you hold on a second?
Yeah. Sure, I can.
Great. Why don't you, when they take you off the air, talk to my producer. If you give him a mailing address, I'll be happy to send you out a book, all right? How about Russ Baker's book on the Bush family, Family of Secrets? Do you have that book already?
No, I don't have it.
I'd love to send it to you, all right? So why don't why don't you do that, all right? Thank you very much.
Russ Baker, by the way, is an excellent investigative reporter, and that's a really good book, so I think he'll enjoy it.
Friend of the show will be on Friday, actually. He was at the Treason in America conference last weekend at Valley Forge, Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, right.
Yeah.
I had a number of friends there. I met Baker back in 2004 when they were doing a recount of the ballots in New Hampshire because they looked questionable, and he and I were both up there. I was working with Nader at the time and was monitoring the recount for Nader, and we did it on behalf, really, of lots of people who contacted the campaign because of the questions about the electronic voting systems. So I met him then.
Yeah, he's a good friend of the show. He's been on our TV side as well, and excellent, as you say, investigative journalist, no question. I think he unearthed some stuff in the Bush family book that I haven't ever seen anyplace else before. Meanwhile, if we could go back to that. By the way, friends, the phone lines are open. If you have a question for Kevin Zeese, a member of DisbarTortureLawyers.com, and if you don't call, please go to that website anyway, whether you call or you don't call. It's an important resource, I think, DisbarTortureLawyers.com. Give us a ring. The phone lines are open, 866-582-9933. I'll shoot you out a book, too, just for calling and asking a question of our guest, like I just did with Jim from New York. Anyhow, so, Kevin, I was asking you before – There's a Truth Out article by Hank Alberelli, the author of the book that I was talking about in the last segment.
Right.
And they're quoting the lawyers for Jose Padilla that saying that they were scrambling his brains with LSD in detention. Other than that reference, do you know of any other evidence of that?
Not in the Olson case. I mean, the
no. In this recent modern torture business, we hear about waterboarding all the time.
I've actually read about that. I wish I could remember where. I didn't really come on prepared to think about that, but I did. I have, you know, VotersForPeace.us has a. We do a constant news summary. You can actually sign up to receive our daily news summary, which doesn't cost anything. But we have, so I remember seeing articles about. Those kinds of issues, but I wish I could pinpoint more information on it. I really didn't come prepared to think about that.
Sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
that's all right.
If there's any way you can reach out to Jose Padilla's legal team, I'd love to get that to be a little more definitive. I think it's a fascinating question.
It is.
Okay. All right. So, good. I got Jim's address there. Friends, you can give us a call, 866-582-9933. And we're talking with Kevin Zeese from DisbarTortureLawyers.com. Now, Kevin, this recent bit of news where, what was it, an inspector general in the Justice Department or some kind of an investigation?
A deputy attorney general overruled the Office of Professional Responsibility.
Right. Now, how common is that sort of thing?
It's not common at all.
Okay.
I mean, the whole process was not common. I mean, this was a multi-year investigation, which took, that's a long time, and they gave a draft of it to the two targets, who were Jay Bybee, who's embarrassingly now a judge on the second highest court in the country, the U.S. Court of Appeals. He's in the Ninth Circuit in Nevada. So they gave a copy to him, and they gave a copy to John Yoo, and allowed their lawyers to respond before it was released. That's unusual as well. And then even though they were given a chance to respond, the Office of Professional Responsibility still found that the actions that they took were unethical. And so when they made those findings, they made them pretty clearly. There were a number of very strong quotations in the report about the unethical nature of it, that they were essentially not serving the law but trying to give the client, the White House, the decision they wanted. And so then the Deputy Attorney General overruled them, and that prevents, it from going forward. Now we hope to see somebody in the Congress, either the Senate or House or both, do their own investigation and make it public.
Unbelievable. We're speaking with Kevin Zeese from DisbarTortureLawyers.com. We'll be back with Kevin right on the other side of this break. You can join us, too, if you'd like, 866-582-9933.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INM War Report Radio. And a very interesting guest today. As a matter of fact, we're going to have him come back because I like not only his knowledge but his whole approach. They're quite approachable. You know, sometimes you're dealing with this arcane legal business and it's a little bit obtuse, but that's certainly not the case today. We're speaking with Kevin Zeese. We're speaking with Kevin Zeese.
As the Wall Street Journal said, Meese with a Z.
Speaking of legal problems, there you go again.
That's when I was working on a drug war, and they had me, Kevin, parentheses, Meese with a Z, Zeese.
Well,
isn't that amazing? In the Wall Street Journal, is that bizarre?
Well, the Wall Street Journal was a big fan of Ed Meese, I think.
Of course they were.
Yeah,
course
yeah. They missed him.
They weren't a big fan of mine.
Well, all right, now that we're talking about Ed Meese, and what about his great, what was it, anti-pornography crusade or something.
Oh,
what was the thing you went on?
Oh, yeah, that and the drug war. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we're talking with Kevin about disbarredtorturelawyers.com, but since you mentioned the drug war, is that something that you also cover, Kevin?
I've worked on that for about 30 years since I was in law school.
So certainly with marijuana, I mean, it's just totally ridiculous, right?
Oh, yeah. 800,000 arrests a year for marijuana. It's the majority of drug arrests. We have a guy just today we heard about, a 54-year-old guy who, for possession of a quarter of a pound of marijuana in Texas, got 35 years in jail. It's insane. So that people in Texas now be spending $20,000 to $30,000 a year to keep that guy housed, probably for the rest of his life. We the United States, because of these kinds of decisions, the United States with 5% of the world's population has 25% of the world's prisoners. One out of four of the world's prisoners are in cells in the land of the free.
That's like including China? I mean,
yes, including China.
They got a billion
including
people.
Russia, including Russia. Including India.
What percentage does China have?
Oh, it's tiny compared to us. They have lots of other ways to control people's behavior, though. But they don't rely on mass incarceration the way we do. We are the leading incarcerator in the world by far.
Well, I have my own theories. Do you have any idea why that might be the case?
On the drug laws?
On the incarceration and then on the drug laws.
Well, I mean, incarceration, if you look at the statistics, I mean, about more than half the drug offenders in the country are nonviolent offenders. So we're housing people who really shouldn't be put in jail. And that's the first major problem. Why we're doing it? Well, it's interesting. If you look back at the timing of the escalation of drug enforcement, of course, we've seen drug use for most of the century, but the real escalation of enforcement occurred around the same time that the Civil Rights Acts were passed, when blacks got the right to vote. And one way to prevent blacks from getting the right to vote is to, charge them with criminal offenses and convict them, and that removes the right to vote. But it's a great method of control. The United States has like one out of 30 people now on probation, parole, or incarcerated. That is a pretty strong security state when you have one out of 30 people being monitored by the government on probation, parole, or incarcerated themselves. So it's a control mechanism.
I would say that it's deep in our genetics as a country. It probably goes back to the days of slavery when you needed strong controls over large portions of the population to keep a slave revolt from happening. And to keep people in fear that if they went out of line, they could be, dealt with very severely. And then with the drugs itself, not only was it the civil rights era, but it was also the Vietnam War era.
No question.
I think they felt that they were not getting enough sober young people to go and kill. And in fact, that was one of the reasons it really propelled pot use in any case. The first people I knew as a young man growing up who were using pot were the GIs coming back from Vietnam. And they were turning everybody on.
With tie sticks.
Oh, my goodness. They had and then GIs come back from Korea. They used to call it Granny Goose potato chips. They had these big potato chip cans full of pot over there. And it was like, the adults were not sane. They had this insane war going on. You couldn't go to your doctor and say, hey, you people are all crazy. I need something to chill out with. So people medicated themselves.
Exactly. And we're a country for the first time in our history where a majority of people in polls believe that we should no longer criminalize marijuana. So that's a major step forward. And we're seeing state after state put in place medical marijuana laws. And, we're seeing in California and Colorado and other states a lot of dispensaries that are openly advertising marijuana. So we've come a long way. We've got a long way to go, but we've come a long way. We still arrest 800,000 people a year for marijuana offenses, and 90% of those are for possession, not for sale. So we are wasting a lot of resources, incarcerating people who really are not a threat to the community.
And it's this huge cash crop, right? I mean, I hear it's the largest cash crop in the United States.
It, of course, has inflated prices. It's got prices like silver does, and you can grow it in your closet. So if you have a weed that you can grow in your closet that is worth the value of silver, you really think police can stop it?
Well, it seems to me that, obviously people are paying the high price for it right now. I think you could probably get rid of the national debt, if you just sort of made it legal and taxed it.
We could definitely make progress.
Make it legal, take half of the price and throw it away, take the other half and tax and turn some of that into taxes.
The other advantage of that is then you get more control of it. A regulated market is more controllable than a prohibition market. Having the government regulate something versus having criminals distributing something, which is going to have more control, which is going to be a safer approach. It's obvious that it's a safer approach, it's a more effective approach, and it's a more economical approach. But we are stuck in this kind of do the same thing over and over again attitude, even though it doesn't work, and we see it on so many issues. And, the marijuana laws are just one of many.
Well, the control that the criminals – the big-time criminals, I'm not talking about the regular people who are just growing it for themselves, but the big-time traffickers who are, by nature, they have to be criminals if the laws are the way they are. Their method of control is quite brutal and quite deadly, especially along the border of Mexico, right?
Exactly. Oh, Mexico's in a real serious shooting drug war right now with kidnappings and killings and police getting killed and the military getting involved. And, they're paying the price for the market that's in the United States. And that's just one more reason why we should be seeing these laws changed and brought to something more effective than continuing to do the same old approach of prohibition, which has never worked.
Well, we've gone from tortured lawyers to tortured laws.
We kind of have lost the point.
I didn't know that you were on about that. Maybe we'll just have you on again to talk about that, because that's a whole other topic.
I'm head of a group called Common Sense for Drug Policy, the website csdp.org. And if you have any questions about drug policy, we put out a great thing called Drug War Facts. If you go to drugwarfacts.org, you can see about 2 dozen issues on drug issues that we cover. It's just facts and citations with links to the original sources so people can check it themselves. But it's a very – just by seeing those facts laid out, it's very persuasive on the direction we need to go.
Well, I'm certainly going to check that out, and we'll have you back on just to talk about that. In closing here, let's get back to the torture lawyers. Is there any hope that justice will be served, or has it been a political coup d'etat?
There's definitely hope, and there are people like me and the National Lawyers Guild and others, the Velvet Revolution, which is a coalition group that I'm on the board of, that's working on trying to hold torture facilitators accountable. And then there are both the Judiciary Committee in the House and the Senate. Patrick Leahy and John Conyers have said good things in the past about holding torture lawyers accountable. Now is their chance to actually do it, since the Department of Justice has dropped the ball. So I think pressuring Patrick Leahy and John Conyers right now would be the best thing people could do to try to move this process forward.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, I mean, it seems like we're not getting the kind of investigations out of the Congress and the Senate that we need anymore. It seems like after Bill Clinton was impeached, nobody had an appetite for it anymore. But in any case, listen, Kevin Zeese has been our guest, and we're going to have him back just to talk about the drug war, I think.
All right.
And disbartorturelawyers.com is where you can go to find out his work. Kevin, thanks a lot
for
joining us. I'll be in touch with you to get you out a copy of that book.
All right. Sounds good.
Very good. All right, friends. That wraps it up for today's show. Later in the week, we're going to be joined on Thursday by Betsy Metz, the person who put together the Treason in America conference, Ordinary Housewife, who put it all together. She'll be on Friday. Russ Baker will be with us. I'm not quite sure yet about tomorrow's guest. It'll be a surprise. But we'll be back right here at 4 p.m. tomorrow. This is Tom Kiley, INN War Report. See you then.